and welcome to The Movement. My name is Amy Hiltebrand. I'm joined today with co-host Tori LaChapelle. We're going to be talking a little bit about a couple of different issues. The first of which is we're gonna meet Gina, who is a cannabis refugee here in Colorado, shortly. But I wanted to briefly touch on a scenario and what's going on in Wisconsin, which is where Tori has been really fighting the fight with some of the tribes and having to deal with some of the federal red tape and you know, federal agents swarmed the Menominee Indian Tribe Reservation on Friday and eradicated over 30,000 cannabis plants, which was really alarming to policy reformers and attorneys and other American Indian tribes that are considering growing marijuana or even hemp. And the leaders say that the plants were intended for lawful research, that they were growing industrial hemp, and it's really just turned into something that's pretty terrifying. So Tori, tell us a little bit about what's going on in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it was very terrifying to wake up to the news that the Menominee were raided by the DEA and the BIA, which is the Bureau of Indian Affairs. What's going on right now in Wisconsin, and, you know, thankfully we're seeing other tribes across the country still pushing forward with their initiatives to legalize within their reservations, grow and make available both medicinal and recreational cannabis strains. But what happened in Wisconsin is really, it is alarming in that we're seeing a disconnect between the Cole Memo, which came out under the Obama administration, basically setting a set of rules for the Native American tribes, saying you can and can't do this in order to legally grow cannabis within your reservation, and we won't interfere because they are sovereign nations. And the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill is what we saw federally passed that allows hemp to be grown for research purposes. And that's what the Menominee were doing. They did in July and August, I was a part of helping do presentations with the Menominee tribe to help decide if they wanted to move forward with medical and recreational cultivation and making that available. But they had already started their hemp project under the Farm Bill and the Cole Memo. And they have been working this entire time in good faith with the federal authorities. You know, any dispute between what they were trying to do and the Farm Bill and the Cole Memo, they've been going over with the U.S. Attorney General's office here for this area and been willing to go to court to settle those disputes before the DEA and the BIA stepped in and decided unilaterally at the 9th hour or the 11th hour, right before harvest, that they were going to declare this crop to be cannabis and not hemp, based on a second field test, which we know that THC testing is often unreliable, but also to unilaterally destroy it without giving the tribe a chance to present its own evidence in federal court and without any due process ever. It is a very, very scary situation if we were to see that happen again, either in Wisconsin to another one of the tribes. The Chippewa are also looking at planting and making available cannabis on the reservation, as well as, you know, tribes across the country. So what we saw, you know, Chairman Bisaw, the chairman of the Menominee tribe, came out earlier this week and kind of talked about what happened, and that he was out of town, basically. And they've been working very closely with this U.S. Attorney General's office, who is interpreting this Cole Memo quite differently from other offices and other attorney generals from across the country, and definitely different from how it was intended to be interpreted. And so while the chairman was out of town, a BIA agent working alongside local and state and federal authorities decided to get a search warrant simply because there were vehicles from Colorado noted on the reservation, which the company working with the tribe on its hemp crop is from Colorado, yes, but they've always been from Colorado since June, since the tribe planted this and has been working with authorities, and that's never been basis for issue before. And it certainly has nothing to do with the legalities of hemp or the interpretation of the Cole memo, but as we often see in search warrants, things were skewed and painted a certain way in order to gain access to the reservation. And what we saw, just even illustrated in the search warrant and the affidavits itself, is this agent tested what he thought were cannabis versus industrial hemp plants for THC, and the first test came up negative, a field test. But that wasn't good enough. He waited a few days, got a different field test, supposedly one he felt more, he had more faith in because it hadn't been sitting in his car for a period of time, and decided then to test the plant material again for THC. It showed a presumptive positive for THC, which we know those tests are not scientifically accurate, and often people go to jail because of scientifically inaccurate tests. And that one test gave him the authority to call in the DEA, and they completely destroyed the crop. The 30,000 plants, they bulldozed to the ground before any action could be taken by the tribe to preserve their own assets, to defend themselves, to do anything. They bulldozed the plants to the ground. And
that is
what
unbelievable.
This action was. Yeah, this was bullying. This is nothing but bullying. And that was intended to scare the other tribes and to scare us in Wisconsin and to make this U.S. Attorney General feel like he has the power to do what he wants. And unfortunately, he doesn't have that power. And we're going to continue to press this in court. And frankly, any decision that comes down in our favor or even out of our favor, but it will come down within the tribe's favor because there have already been numerous court rulings on this. It will come down in our favor and hopefully set a precedent to prevent any sort of thing like this happening to any other tribe across the country, because this has been devastating. The Menominee are one of the poorest tribes in the country, and this was their hope to be able to lift their people up, cannabis for research, cannabis for medicine, cannabis for recreational uses to make available, and with the revenue, lift their people up, you know, get them out of poverty. And the fact that they decided to strike this tribe really hits home for a lot of people, especially those who support Native Americans and access to cannabis, because this was the wrong tribe to mess with, frankly. And
well,
we're gonna
absolutely.
Settle this in court, and we're going to make precedent. So we're
absolutely.
Moving forward, but unfortunately, because of what Wisconsin's political climate is right now, it's very difficult to have hope and access for patients to cannabis legally anytime soon. The CBD bill was a failure, as the CBD-only bills always are. If they don't allow cultivation within state, it encourages federal law breaking. parents are not comfortable breaking federal law. And what we have with Scott Walker and the GOP doing right now in Wisconsin, we have very little hope for access for patients. But the tribe stepped up. The tribe said, we're willing to cultivate that hope for you, since we know that there, with the political system as it is right now, it's not looking that great. And they struck right at us. They came right at us with the full force of the government. And we're just going to have to hang in there and see what these court cases tease out to be, and keep pushing politically within the Capitol as well at the same time.
Well, and that, you know, that brings up, because it's one of the things that to me is near and dear, and I know it is to you as well, and in many cases, people have indigenous Native American ancestry and descendancy, especially, for example, my husband and I are both from Oklahoma. One of the things that we're starting to see that's incredibly alarming is the sovereignty that we thought that, you know, at least surviving family and organized aspects of the tribes could benefit from the genocide. I mean, let's just cut to the straight of it. It was genocide. But now you're seeing, you know, in July of this past year, two California tribes were raided, the Pitt River Tribe and the Alturas, Indiana Rancheria. And I know that they got over, I think it was either 12 or 15,000 plants. And then we, you know, we just interviewed Nick McCombs, host of Strain Talk, at the National Cannabis Summit. Very fortunate to interview Alex Whiteplume of the Oglala Sioux Nation, you know, and they had, they did the same thing. You know, it was their third harvest. They didn't bother him the first year or the second year, and it was truly hemp. And they came down and they, you know, they did the same thing to them. And so he's actually in the midst of a lawsuit, but, you know, they tried getting it where they could go ahead and the Sioux Nation could go ahead and farm the hemp until after the lawsuit. And South Dakota refused to agree to lifting the court order. This is unbelievable. These are sovereign tribes. This is their native land, and this is a plant. So the epitome of being unfree is beyond upon us, and we're seeing it constantly. There are people have given up. People aren't voting. People are tired of fighting because they've got a government that holds a patent on an aspect of a plant that proves that it's medicinal as well as non-toxic and non-lethal. Yet they don't allow access to its citizens. Instead, rather, will make criminals out of those citizens, you know, just for money. So it's heartbreaking.
Right.
It's really, at this point, what can we do, Tori? I mean, what can we do?
You know, I really, and it's about a people's movement, and I've always believed that about cannabis. You know, not only does it bring people from different backgrounds together under the same principles, which, you know, we have Republicans that believe in limited government. We have libertarians who believe in limited government. We have Democrats who don't want the government telling us what to do with our bodies. You know, we all as people need to rise up. And what we're seeing, you know, we're seeing that within Bernie Sanders. He's come out to say that federal prohibition needs to stop. Cannabis needs to be removed completely from the Controlled Substances Act. And really, that's the only thing that will solve any of this. You know, when we're seeing the piecemeal stuff put together between the states where, you know, it's okay if you do it here, but not there. It's okay if you do a little bit here, but not that way and stuff like that. There's still a prohibition going on. There's still people going to jail, you know. So that's where there's a lot of frustration. And my frustration doubled because it was kind of hard. It's kind of hard to get some tribes to agree to grow because they don't want to give the government an excuse to come into their lands again. The government over and over again has offered them things. You know, this is what they do to the indigenous tribes in America. Okay, this is what the U.S. government does. They offer them things. Okay, we'll let you do this on your land under these conditions. And, again, they've broken their promises. The U.S. government has, again, broken their promises to the Native Americans, just like they do to us, but, you know, in a different way. But they've broken their promises once again to the Native Americans that they would not interfere on their sovereign lands. And this, the only way to stop to them from using cannabis as a reason and a way for them to violate everybody's constitutional rights. And that's the thing about America. It's the Constitution or nothing. You know, that's what we're supposed to be about, right? The Constitution are inalienable rights. Cannabis prohibition has given them so many reasons to violate our constitutional rights. So down to the nitty-gritty, cannabis prohibition is so unconstitutional. It needs to be ended before we can start acting like constitutional Americans again. You know what I'm saying?
That's absolutely right. You know, nature should never be illegal. It sets a precedent that denies us basic human rights from the very beginning. And man's law should never outlaw God's law, you know, God's creation, whether you're religious or spiritual. It's just the simple aspect of nature. Not all nature is good. Some plants are certainly toxic and lethal. Cannabis just isn't one of them. You know, I can actually understand. I might not be that mad if poison ivy were illegal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing good that comes from poison ivy. But even then, I would fight for that plant because it's as simple as that is my – that's the right that men and women have fought and died for, that men and women still fight and die for. And if we don't have the freedom to access a plant, freedom doesn't exist, you know. And that's a good segue because we've got yet another refugee, and her name is Gina. And she is originally from Florida but was also in Georgia, but ultimately had to come to Colorado to be able to access a all-natural, non-toxic, non-lethal plant that is cannabis as a medicine. I mean, tell us a little bit about her, Tori. I mean, what's Gina's story?
Gina's great. I like Gina in that she's been in Colorado for a few years. So she can give us some insight into what has changed over the last few years as we've seen this push of cannabis refugees coming in, because we're seeing the war as war often gets when the fight gets harder. As we're getting stronger, as the government's fighting back against us, we're seeing refugee crisis, and we're seeing it in Colorado. And the thing about Gina is she moved to Colorado a few years ago. She suffers from fibromyalgia, Lyme disease, and arthritis that often, you know, accompany that. She's from Florida. She was in Georgia when she was compelled to have to leave Georgia by an incident because she was, you know, she's always used cannabis to help her symptoms and her conditions. And so she moved a few years ago. And she has a lot of great insight into using cannabis as medicine in a place where it's illegal, you know, how hard it is, the kind of pressure, in a place like the South, you know, Florida and Georgia, and family members and neighbors and what they think about that. But then moving to a place like Colorado for access, is Gina on?
I am.
Oh, hi, Gina. So we talked a little bit yesterday. But why don't you kind of introduce yourself and tell us just a quick synopsis of, you know, why you moved to Colorado as a medical refugee, just your conditions and kind of what prompted your move. Like many of us, you know, what prompts our move to Colorado as a refugee is fear. And something happens, you know, or something compels us, either a sick child or we're sick ourselves or we have to go because we have no other choice. But go ahead and kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, Gina.
Hi there. I will be 40 on the 13th, and I've been using cannabis probably since I was about 15 years old. I believe I've had fibromyalgia that long. It just took a while to get diagnosed, many, many trips to the doctors, many different medications, therapies. Finally, in 2011, I was actually backed over by a semi-truck, and they tried to just put me on all these different drugs. They had me totally messed up. I went back to, you know, just using cannabis. We were traveling through Georgia with my young son. He was about 2 at the time. He's 7 now. He was in his car seat. We got turned around Union County, Georgia. We kind of got lost there, did a little turnaround. Then all of a sudden we were being pulled over with Florida plates for suspicious activity. We did have a joint in the console. They pulled us out of the car. They told us, you know, we're going to take you to jail. We'll take your son and protective services. Now, mind you, at that time I was several hundred miles from home. They said, you know, you better tell us if you have anything at all on you. We did. We admitted, hey, we have one joint. That's all we have. They detained us on the side of the road for over 2 hours. They put a tube in the gas tank. I mean, they ripped the car apart, apparently just assuming that we had to have been smuggling, you know, large quantities. And I think when they were all done and they truly only found that one marijuana cigarette that they went on ahead and took my boyfriend to jail. Thankfully, they only took him. They did let me keep the car. I was able to then fortunately go get him out of jail because, again, we were hundreds of miles from home in northern Georgia on the way to a friend's house. And from that point on, that incident ended up costing us thousands of dollars, lots of back and forth at court because it was such a small town, it got delayed for almost over a year. Then finally, standing on the courthouse steps in Union County, Georgia, I prayed and I said, depending on the outcome of this verdict, because had he been guilty, we would have then had 12 months minimum of hardcore probation, license loss, student loan loss. He's going for his bachelor's, almost finished. That all gone away. Everything would have gone away over that one joint. They did, you know, again, had he not taken the rap and I been responsible for it, that same thing would have happened to me, only then also Child Protective Services would have been involved.
So it was just very scary. Of our nightmares. You know, that's a nightmare for so many of us who have in illegal states, who can drink ourselves silly, have medicine cabinets full of pills that could kill our kids. But if we get
that's
caught
right.
with a joint, that if they were to eat it, smoke it, do whatever with it, it would not harm them whatsoever. They shouldn't do it, but, you know, kids are kids, and if they get a hold of stuff, they get a hold of stuff. But it's completely non-toxic. But if we get caught with it, oh, our kids are gone, we're in jail, and our futures are ruined. Which
well,
is the
and
story
you know, it's
of
even...
just about every patient in an illegal state with children. That's everybody's fear.
That's absolutely
Everyone.
Right. It's absolutely, parents are terrified. And let's get real. Not even a joint, Tori. You could have an ounce. You could, I believe they said it would be like 500 ounces that they would have to consume. Now, obviously, at that point, if the child consumes the cannabis, they're going to be high unless they're only consuming hemp. But they'll probably never
right.
be as high as the pharmaceutical high they'd been on. And now let's get even...
Yeah.
There are, with our son, who is now pharmaceutical free, there were pills that were so high dosage, if our two toddler sons would have got a hold of one of them, it could have seriously caused them, well, it could have killed them.
Yeah,
one pill.
Permanent damage.
Permanent
damage.
Permanent damage.
Yep.
Or permanent addiction. You know,
right,
there are
exactly.
benzodiazepines. If you, they're giving children in the most developmentally important years of their life, you know, 1 to 5 years old, they are giving them pharmaceuticals. They are giving them benzos. They are giving them psychiatric drugs. They are giving them whatever pills they can get the doctors to write the prescriptions for that the insurance or their parents will pay for. And the list of side effects is repulsive. So when these people tell us that cannabis hasn't been tested, it hasn't been tested long term, I just want to scream. Most of the FDA-approved drugs have only had one clinical trial, certainly don't have any long-term testing, and have a list of side effects as well as being, you know, potentially lethal. That being said, give us the plant back. It's our plant.
Yeah.
You know, give it back. Keep your pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
There's enough people on the planet to feel your greed need. You know, just let us have our plant back. And so that brings up a very important point that I want to touch on because, and this is, it's highly controversial, and Tori and I have, we've seen it because, you know, there's good cops and there's bad cops. Law enforcement, men and women, are still our neighbors, our friends, our family, and they need to know that they don't have to defend an unjust law. They can go after criminals instead of citizens. And even though that particular officer took your boyfriend to jail, and maybe that was, you know, who knows, he didn't take you, he didn't take your kid, he didn't take the car. You know, he wasn't, I mean, I came from Oklahoma, and I'll never forget, in a small town, the police chief in Jones, there was a guy that was from out of town that pulled over to ask him for directions, and he had a joint behind his ear. And I mean, this is Oklahoma. So the guy, the police chief says, gives him directions, takes the joint out from behind his ear and steps it on the ground and said, son, it ain't legal around here. And that was it. Because he
and
knew
that
the guy was, that was it. I mean, you don't have to defend unjust laws. It's the politicians, our legislative and judicial aspects that need to make sure that there are laws that make it easy to distinguish for our law enforcement and military the difference between citizens and criminals. Criminals
right.
are child molesters, murderers, rapists, terrorists, bombing, you know, not people committing victimless, nonviolent offenses. And so
if we can communicate
that to people on a personal level, you know, you can be a good cop, you can be an excellent federal agent by focusing on the things that best serve the citizens of the United States of America. And really, especially until we can muddle through, obviously, you've got half of the states in this United States that are saying legalize it, and yet a government saying that it's literally the most dangerous drug on the planet. It's the safest recreational drug on the planet. It's one of the most effective actual medicinal drugs on the planet. You know, and so when you thought about losing your child, Gina, I mean, did that just like, was that it? You were like, that's it. I'm getting to Colorado.
Well, just so you know, I do have a son that's 23 and a son that's 21. I had them when I was 16 and 18 in Florida, and I was always worried about that, but not near as much as I am in this day and age. I don't know, you know, maybe it was just my age or something, but now I have these two other kids. They're 7 and 9 that I had with the new marriage. Their father is not in the picture. I'm on my own with them. My other kids were pretty much already raised at that point. But, yes, of course, because I have, you know, to take care of these two kids, I'm their only provider. I mean, their father is literally in prison. So if something happened to me, I mean, how would that make those kids feel? Both of their parents are in jail. One for, you know, that's addiction problems there stemming from alcohol, which is perfectly okay in this world. So, you know, he's in prison because of alcohol, and their mom's in prison because of cannabis. Give me a break. You know, that would just be the worst thing ever.
Yeah. And that's the thing about the war on drugs, that America is just getting so wrong. Every other country in the world, every other civilized country, treats addiction to any substance as a medical issue, because it is. You know, addiction has a lot of medical and psychological roots to it, and they treat it as a medical issue. They don't treat it as a crime. Anytime you prohibit something legally, you create a legal crime, and you turn the person into a criminal, whether it's a moral thing that they do or not, you're turning the person into a criminal. So when we talk about the police, you know, saying that they have a choice, that these people aren't criminals, the criminals are the murderers and stuff like that, but when anytime you have a law, which their law, their duty and their job is to enforce the law, anytime you have a law that prohibits something like cannabis use or whatever, anytime it's a law and someone breaks that law, you are automatically creating criminals. Whether the action itself is criminal or not, you know, whether smoking a joint hurts anybody, no, it does not hurt anybody. What about it makes it criminal? The fact that it's illegal and you had to get it from a drug dealer. You know what I'm saying? That people
and
are
the
saying,
prisons
oh, committing these crimes. You know, people keep saying they're committing crimes. Well, listen, if there was no prohibition, there would be no crime. All you have to do is change the law. The crime's gone. And everybody's job would be easier. Everybody's life would be easier. So, you know, that brings up a good point about America's war on drugs and how the rest of the world treats addiction completely different. And we make it a crime. Here in America, our new thing is, you know, we're filling up our prisons. We imprison more people in America than they do in China. And we think we're a free country. And we use the drug laws to imprison those people. We have more people in jail for cannabis than we do for all other crimes combined, including murder, robbery, rape, everything else. More people are in jail for weed than all other crimes combined. And how did we get there? The war on drugs. And we turned
absolutely
we turned medical issues, addiction, into from a medical issue, like other countries treat it, into a crime. So now we have also sick people in prison.
people dying in jail. There are people right now dying in jail. It happened in Colorado. It happened in Michigan, going through abrupt opiate withdrawal. One man was even legally prescribed methadone to get off of heroin. You know, everybody gets heroin. Let's put him on methadone, right? They decided to take him to jail because he didn't pay some fines. And he,
parking tickets, right? Like parking tickets.
You can't, exactly, because you can't abruptly withdraw. I'm a nurse, so I know these things. If I, this happened in a hospital and I ignored a patient who was abruptly withdrawing off of methadone, I would be in jail and that hospital would be sued. But what they're doing is, and what's happening is people with addiction issues are dying in jails because they're not they're not given medical care. A mere abrupt withdrawing off of serious substances, benzodiazepine, alcohol, methadone, heroin, things like that, when you're abrupt withdrawing off of it, you can and it can die. It's a reality. It's a fact. And instead of treating this person as a patient, they're treating them as a criminal and putting them in jail. And people are dying in jail as patients. And
with people watching. Oh, and the family. Yeah. Thank God for that family that said, you know what, we're not going to let his death go unnoticed. We are going to force them to release the tapes that show that they literally watched him die. Number one, it gets so deep because the war on drugs has gone through numerous evolutions, including in what hit hard with a lot of the people that are incarcerated now that have been incarcerated for years, is when the Nixon and the 10 and 20 mandatory hit, where you literally were being served mandatory 10 and 20-year sentences for a plant. If you had a seed, you were going down. And now we've got this evolution in drugs, legal drugs, that are pharmaceuticals, and people don't know. We had to research. Our son has Dravet. That's why we moved here. That's why we're refugees. He was on pharmaceuticals daily from the time he was almost four. But after 8 months of cannabis, we were able to get him completely pharmaceutical free. But Tori knows this. I had to message her constantly, low and slow, take it easy, watch your child, pay attention, because the withdrawals can be fatal, the pills can be fatal, the seizures that come on from taking away this pill that he's addicted to by design can be fatal. And, yet cannabis can't be fatal.
Well, and Gina, I have a Lyme diagnosis, fibroarthritis diagnosis as well, so I'm sure Gina can agree. The pharmaceuticals they have available for patients like Gina and I, including, high-dose painkillers, AEDs, antidepressants, benzodiazepines, all of those things are the same kind of drugs that they put kids with behavioral and psychiatric and seizure issues on. And like I said, being a parent trying to function, I have four boys on those pharmaceuticals, and knowing, trying to function through the side effects and knowing that, I was a school nurse, okay? Kids do, once they hit middle school, they do some scary stuff, including bringing their parents to school and sharing. And that was always a big fear of mine, that either some other kid would be at our house and see my pills or something would happen because of the type of pills I had to take, doctor directed, and I had no access to cannabis in order to control my conditions. But just even having them in my home, it scared me almost as much as having unsecured guns in my house. And only because kids do stupid things, and kids are going to experiment. And right now, because pills are so readily available, I just read a statistic yesterday that the number of people on five or more pharmaceuticals has doubled in this country. And just the fact that I was so afraid of my
kids. Did you say doubled?
It has doubled. The number of people on five or more pharmaceuticals has doubled in this country. Which is astounding. And we wonder why there's a pill problem. I mean, they say, oh, you potheads, you're smoking weed and you're doing this and you're doing that. But, the pills that are legal and are there for us with our conditions, cause a whole flurry of problems that are way more controversial, more worse than cannabis could ever cause. But because they're not illegal, they're accepted. There are commercials encouraging you to talk to your doctor about this pill. It's perfectly legally and socially acceptable, when in reality the consequences of those pharmaceuticals are deadly. And we see that, I mean, look at the number of overdose deaths we see every year in this country. I mean, it's
49
astounding.
A day.
Forty-nine
a day, and that's accidental.
That's right.
That doesn't include intentional suicides. That's 49 people that take prescription pharmaceuticals, and now granted, some of them it's because they mix with alcohol. And please, anybody, please, if you're taking prescription pharmaceuticals, do not mix them with alcohol. It can be lethal the first time, the thousandth time, you just don't know. But you've got people literally dying from legal pharmaceuticals accidentally. They weren't trying to die. They just, the pills quit working, or, you know, it just like that. They had a couple of martinis, or they had a few beers on game day. And this is a problem, you know, plus the suicides with our veterans. They're on pharmaceuticals, and it's 22 a day commit suicide. So why wouldn't we try a plant? Well, so Gina, how does the plant work for you? I mean, are you happy? Does it feel like, do you feel like you're freer in Colorado? Obviously, you don't have the fear of losing your children like you did before, right?
Yeah, that is just what's really huge. The anxiety relief alone from not having to worry about getting pulled over, like you said, with that joint. I mean, if it's secured safely as it was in Georgia, even then, it's not going to be an issue for me today. That's huge. Just the relief alone is huge. I did want to mention,
that helps you be a better parent.
Yeah, talking about those pharmaceuticals, they had me on amitriptyline, tramadol, flexeril, savella, lyrica. Now it's Cymbalta. Now lyrica came to me with a booklet of side effects. I'm talking a booklet. Not a page.
There's already a lawsuit coming against Lyrica. I like the new commercials, and I think it was Wendy Turner the other day. She brought it up at the National Cannabis Summit. She said, I just saw a commercial for a pharmaceutical for symptoms
for
that are produced by another pharmaceutical. And I was like, you're kidding me. And that's what she said. It was for constipation. Because if you take this one particular pharmaceutical and you get the constipation that is, you know, pretty well known with it, then get this other pill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's from narcotic pain relievers. Yep. And you know what the funny thing is, as an old nurse, you know, the standard protocol, if someone's on narcotic pain relievers, they're going to get constipated. The standard protocol is a good old-fashioned Senecot tab. It's made out of a plant.
I have
that
in mind.
Thank you very much. And works fantastically if you've ever had to track people's DM results. But now they want to sell you this high-dollar prescription pharmaceutical to relieve those symptoms from the other pharmaceutical that we have you on. You know, and getting back to the Lyrica, thank God. You know, I had tried Neurontin back before Lyrica came out. And Neurontin is not a bad med. It's an old med. And if it works for you, it works for you. But, you know, at the doses I needed it, I couldn't function, which is just the story with pharmaceuticals, and which is not the story with cannabis. The dose I need, I can function completely fine and can still control my pain. But when Lyrica, you know, came out, my doctor said, well, do you want to try the Lyrica? And thank God I had a decent doctor. And I said, well, what's the difference between Lyrica and Neurontin? Because one's gabapentin and one's pregabalin. It's a little bit different, but not really. It's just repackaged, reformulated Neurontin. And she said, you know what? The side effects from Lyrica do not make it worth it. She said, if you thought the side effects from Neurontin were bad, the side effects from the Lyrica are going to be 10 times as worse. So thank God, you know, my doctor was honest with me. She wasn't trying to push a pill on me, but she knew my history. You know, she knew that pharmaceuticals and even Neurontin at the dose I needed didn't work. She wasn't going to push the new version on me. And, you know, and I think the thing is, you know, being with the same doctor over 10 years and being honest with her, you know, in an illegal state, and thank God I feel comfortable enough to do that, because honestly, your medical professionals really do, in most cases, want to help you. You know, they really want to listen to you. They want to see you get better. She has watched me go from 12 pharmaceuticals, prescriptions, not counting, you know, non-prescription supplements, from 12 prescriptions to just cannabis.
And well, I tell you,
when I'm...
I'd love to say that I agree with you, Tori, but I haven't. We have been through. It's like a revolving door of doctors that all they want to do was use my kid as a guinea pig for pills.
Well,
and
yep.
There's so many cases now where, like we're talking about, parents get, if you're not in a, say, cannabis safe state, you mention cannabis or Colorado, you can expect a call or a visit from CPS. You know, if your kid's in the hospital, it's unbelievable. And I don't, you know, the knowledge and the science is out there. I understand, manipulation tactics and propaganda by pharmaceutical, but at some point, the doctor's got to be a human being, you know. These are people, too, and the pharmaceuticals have these lists of side effects, and it's just appalling to me. You guys are talking about it. You guys, I had to mute myself listening to the list of you guys' pills because I told my husband, I said, holy bleep, how would they ever function on pills like
that? And that's
that?
The thing. As a mom, are you kidding me? You know, but that's perfectly, you know, here's the thing. If my life would have fallen apart, you know, you know, when the side effects got too bad, I had to keep switching it up. I had to stop taking the medicine. I had to live in pain, which children watching their parents suffer creates a whole nother type of suffering for them because it scares them. You know, honestly, children suffering is one thing when they're physically suffering themselves, but children also suffer when their parent is suffering. You know,
let me ask you a question as a nurse, because you've got young children and Gina's got kids and she's going through round two, I'm going through round two. Now, this is getting really simple. What about, you're talking about your kids seeing you, but what about just the simple fact of children, you know, age infant to up, seeing you taking handfuls of pills? They don't differentiate
it's the norm.
Between the different pills. I mean, isn't that creating a norm in their psyche? Isn't that, like, really?
Yes. Yes. My grandmother had a medicine bag she carried around full of pills.
Oh, yes. My mother does, too. My mother does. And my mother's health is atrocious. My mother has cancer. It's her fourth bout. But she has always carried around a bag of pills with her from the time I could remember, from when I was little. So, you know, when I became a nurse, pills were just part of your job, really. pills in America have become part of our diet, literally. You know, they're pushing, in other countries, there's no commercials for the pharmaceuticals that the people on TV are telling you you might need. That comes from your doctor. There's no commercialization. And you know, that the difference is America's healthcare system is profit-based, and that's why they get away with it. Other countries, you know, their healthcare systems are different. It's not about making money. It's about taking care of people. And as soon as you start basing healthcare on profit, some bad things start happening, including this push. You know, how else are they going to make money except by creating customers, knowing that these pills do not cure the problem? They only create new ones. They're just temporary Band-Aids, but that's how you drive up profits. And now
that's
pills
just
are
like
part
the prison
of
system.
Our culture. Exactly.
Just like
and
the
pills
prison
are part
system.
Of our culture.
I just want to tell you something that's probably going to enrage you, if nothing else. So today at 3 o'clock, I have to go for a meeting with a man for drug and alcohol counseling because I had to go get assistance. And I noticed you posted about Wisconsin this morning, Tori. And as I went for federal assistance, and they said, do you use any drugs or alcohol? And I said, no. You know, I had already written that in the pre-interview and everything, and he said, well, what about medical marijuana? And I said, what about it? he said, do you use it? And I'm sitting there going, well, I do have my card, or do they know this information? I don't want to lie and get in jail for fraud, you know, or anything. So I said, well, I am a medical marijuana patient. He said, so do you currently use it? And I'm like, well, I mean, not like right now, but yes, I carry the salve in my purse. I put that on my joints, on my arthritis. It calms down the inflammation. So, yeah, now I have been referred. They were not able to help me. They said I was no longer eligible for that program until after I go see this guy today at 3 for drug and alcohol counseling. He wants me to
What program?
Yes.
I had to ask, is this like food stamps? Is it TANF? Is it a waiver? Is it state, city, federal?
Federal. It's temporary assistance for needy families, known here as Colorado Works. Because I am, my hands have gotten literally so bad that I am literally unable to work. So while I'm filing for disability, I need to get some kind of help for my kids, since, of course, their father is, you know, incarcerated. So I get no help. And they told me that, And I just think that is a huge, because what they want is for me to
that
go.
That is patient discrimination. Tori, isn't that discrimination?
It is.
Because
it
you are a legal medical marijuana patient in a state where medical marijuana is legal and accessible. You know, we obviously had the federal aspect, but I mean, truly, you get down to basic human rights and access to medicine. So now you're being being denied.
In their eyes, I would be forced.
Oh, you're being and you're being forced. Yeah, that's true. You're being forced into. You're being treated like somebody that has an alcohol or drug problem instead of a patient.
Yes.
What? Right, right. And this
I think I'm gonna mute myself so I can go vomit real quick, you guys. Hold on.
I was just waiting to tell you guys that because that's just crazy.
And see, and that's again where we're seeing this underhanded back room. You know, sure, we'll let you have medical marijuana in your state if you're in a legal state, and we won't bother you. But if you want anything from us federally, if you want any of this or any of that, or if you need help as a person, we're going to lecture you. We're going to make you pee in a cup. We're going to, you know, we're going to send you to drug and alcohol counseling. And that's the thing. That's another thing. That's a big racket in this whole prohibition scheme, like we're seeing in Wisconsin. We saw in Florida, we saw in Arizona, and all these states that passed drug testing laws for public benefits. First of all, very few people on public benefits use illicit drugs to begin with. It's like something like, I think it was 2% less. 2% is less than the general population. The general population, 6% use an illicit drug. Within the people who qualify for programs, it's 2%. And these companies that benefit from the drug testing, from the drug and alcohol, you know, treatment facilities, drug and alcohol counseling that are perpetuating this constant reefer madness within, you know, society and within government benefiting. They are reaping so much money off of this drug testing. And it's costing, and it's costing taxpayers, you know, under the auspice of preventing fraud. You know, if these people are doing drugs, they can afford drugs and they can afford food. And why should we have to pay for their food if they're buying drugs? Well, first of all, that's just harder
because there's no government subsidy for cannabis, but they will no longer prescribe me any pain pills at all because I was honest with my doctor and told her I do use the medical marijuana. It does benefit me greatly in many ways, more so than these other pills that she wants to give me. Do you know I walked out of her office that day with a cholesterol prescription and a blood pressure prescription. I have never had high blood pressure in my life except when I was pregnant with my daughter. I am like, really?
Right.
Like, that's crazy.
And that's the
Well, and the whole
SOP
thing is
too.
Crazy.
And, when you're
and the fact that it's happening in Colorado, and that's what I need to, you know,
yeah,
it's one of those things where, Gina, you're in Colorado. What let's repeat this, ladies and gentlemen. In one of the four states in the United States of America where cannabis, a plant, is legal on the state level, medicinally and recreationally, we have an adult who's over 21 who legally holds a medical marijuana card for numerous conditions that are, you know, viable by Colorado State Board of Health, and is applying for help and is being subjected to discriminatory practices, alcohol and drug counseling before they can even consider whether you're going to get funds that should be readily available to people that qualify legitimately and are in need. And so that's right. That's happening in Colorado, America right now.
Right. Regina, I am so sorry to hear that. We need to talk about that and get people to understand that, you know, it may look all well and good on the surface, but the federal government is still looking at ways to, and basically it's called a chilling effect. And, you know, when we talk about, like, constitutional issues and what the government does to discourage people from exercising their constitutional rights, is they'll do other things, you know, other kind of backwards, sneaky things to scare you out of doing those things, of exercising those rights. And this is just another example. Federally, they're threatening to prevent you from receiving the assistance that you obviously need. Otherwise, you would qualify for because of your conditions, because of your situation, because you have children. But simply because, even though you're legally exercising your state right as a medical marijuana patient, federally they're saying no because we still consider illegal. We're still going to impose all these federal laws on top of you. And that is simply to discourage people from exercising their constitutional rights, you know. And that's why the federal government is not giving this up. And that's really what it is. The power of the oppression that the federal government has created across the board, you know, between minorities and the arrest rates, between the poor and the people with money. You know, this is people looking for assistance because they need it. We already know that the reason that people are needing assistance nowadays is because of actions from the government, you know, and going for disability, you know, that is a valid government program. And, you know, if people don't qualify for disability, they end up in the streets. And if someone like you would end up in the street with your children. And that's what's so frustrating, is this war on drugs and prohibition on every level is affecting minorities, parents, children, tribes. It's affecting
veterans.
You know, whether
veterans,
veterans.
It's fear. You know? The poor veterans. Oh my God. I mean, you want to talk about fear taking away every benefit that you have sacrificed for, even though the pile of pills isn't working for your PTSD, anxiety, and depression. And
making it worse.
Now these are our
soldiers. Got, it makes it worse. And, you know, just like that, 22 a day are committing suicide. And I've asked Matt Kale of 1620 Talk how many of those are on pharmaceuticals. They can't get a number, but they know it's high. Most of them have already been there. It's already gone down the road of no return. And I don't understand how anybody in America, if you can't get behind the kids with cancer and the kids with seizures, and you can't get behind the veterans with PTSD, and you can't get behind the farmers that agriculturally could benefit when they're about to lose family farms, and you just can't get behind nature. I just don't understand why you can't get behind freedom. After everything, living in America, being born, I mean, as an American, and I know we're talking the same, it's all the same here. It doesn't matter whether you're speaking English, Spanish, Chinese, a Native American language. You know, you're in America, and if you're a U.S. citizen, or even if you're living here, getting to see, this was the fight for what would be called freedom, truly freedom. And we're taking a nosedive, and it's just, I, you know, it's like that revolution. It's that burning inside of me that doesn't want to let down everybody that fought and died before me to make sure that I have the right. And it's a minimum right. It's a minimum right. It's a little plant. It's a little dadgum plant right there. I could grow it in a pot. I could do it myself. I could treat my son. I could treat myself. We could do, you know, another plant and have nutritional supplements. But it's a plant.
Right, right. And we know, and here's the thing, you know, everybody, when they get pushback from the conservatives, you know, the basis of a lot of conservative politics is small government, not being told what to do, the freedom to exercise whatever religion you want. And so when it comes to their hesitancy to support cannabis, it really comes down to, do you want the government telling you? Because for some of us, and for some people, like the Native American Church, Rastafarians, it's an established religious sacrament, and the government can't interfere. You know, and conservatives are all well and good with the government not interfering with your spiritual practice because it helps protect their core values, and I respect and I care about that as well. But let's talk about what the government can impose on what you put in your body. You know, alcohol prohibition didn't work either. And we saw the same crime. We saw the same, you know, nation of scofflaws was one of the ways that Ken Burns termed it in his documentary for Frontline on alcohol prohibition. It, you know, the thing that conservatives do care about is freedom, freedom for their guns, freedom for their religion. It's not that hard of a step to allow or to admit that freedom for cannabis and simply what you choose to put in your body and what you choose to use as a medicine or a spiritual sacrament should be protected as well. And I think that that is really what resounds with conservatives and libertarians is small government and getting the government out of our decisions when it comes to our exercising our freedoms. And
you know, you're absolutely right.
Freedom,
you're absolutely right. You know, because
freedom,
cannabis is one of the
cannabis
and freedom. Those are some of the like bipartisan issues that people just won't even deny at some point.
Well, and that's why we're seeing at least 80%, you know, polling for medical marijuana, even in conservative states like Ohio, and we're seeing now close to 60% of polling in approval for full legalization across the country. And, you know, that requires some conservative minded people saying, yeah, we agree. So if we can keep pushing this, you know, as, and it is, but keep in mind that it is across the board, no matter where your ideology comes from, no matter, you know, why you want it legalized, the fact is it has to do with freedom. And America is not as free as we like to believe we are. And we have pulled the wool over people's eyes using prohibition and reefer madness in order to hide the fact that this simple plant, possession of a plant, has been an excuse to limit our freedoms in ways that have never happened before and should never happen in a country like America, not with the Constitution we have. Cannabis is the number one excuse to deny those constitutional rights. You know, search and seizure, equal protection, First Amendment rights, cannabis prohibition defies all of our constitutional rights. And no matter where you come from or what you think, the fact that if you love America, you got to love that Constitution because that's what we're all about. And cannabis prohibition is as unconstitutional as limiting gun rights, as limiting your freedom to practice your religion. Cannabis prohibition does the same thing in much bigger ways and has resulted in much more damage than anything we've ever seen before. Globally, honestly, as a war on drugs has spread from America as being the superpower, we have used the war on drugs to influence other countries and force them to take on our war on drugs policy, or we will remove their funding, we'll go in and we'll do this, and we'll go in and we'll do that. So we force them to adopt our war on drugs. And
that's right, and
so
that's
America,
right.
America,
well,
and
you know, and we have to shut it down, and so we have to thank Gina. Thank you so much. We've got so much more to talk about on the movement.
We do.
And we welcome
you
back anytime. Thank you for sharing your story, and Tori and I just can't wait to have you back on. And we've got a lot more Ohio, a lot more to talk about. So stay tuned for Millennium Grow Broadcast Network. Thank you all, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Dina.